Here it is. All right. Yeah. Now we're dancing. We're dancing.
You know,
I'm dancing.
It's not the same without Sam, though.
Yeah. Sam with his little, his little head cock, and he does the twirly hand thing. And then, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's E-Talk Repeat, another Food Friday. No Sam Marjofsky with us, just John Curtis and me, Ash Watkins. Should be a fun show. Could get a little wild. I had a rough night. You had a rough night, so we'll see where it goes from here.
Also, wild or hungover?
Hungover. Yeah. So who knows what's going to happen? I'm not firing on all cylinders, just some. Occasionally, there's a few misfires. But going back to that song, someone tweeted at us, I think last week, letting us know that Jack in the Box stole our song, is using it in their most recent commercial.
Yeah, and they probably paid royalties for it, too.
I know. Shh, don't tell anyone.
Well, there is fair use, okay? And we're not, taking bucket loads of money to the bank on this podcast, so.
That's our lawyer talking right there.
Yeah.
Fair use. Okay, what's your nickname today?
I'll call it the Bloviating Barrister today.
Bloviating Barrister.
Or the Irritable Epicure. And I've got a few things to be irritable about.
Okay.
We'll get to them in later. We're going to start with the positive and end with the negative. How's that?
All right. I like that.
And is my mic? I told you when we were doing the sound check, this mic seems so sensitive. I think you can hear my nose hairs rustling in it.
That's what the listeners want.
Exactly.
They DM me and they're like, we want more
nose hair rustling,
bodily noises from John Curtis, please.
Yeah. Well, my wife is always like, don't breathe into the microphone. And I go, okay, honey.
The food gal. She should have been here today. I'm calling her out. She should have been here.
She needs to be our on-spot fact checkers when we say things like, well, it's at the intersection of Spring Mountain and Desert Inn. Well, they're parallel. Folks, she's always accusing me when someone asks me for cross streets. I give them two parallel streets. Flamingo, the corner of Flamingo and Trop.
That's funny. I always interpose Flamingo and Rainbow for some reason. I always like mix them up, but I know where I'm talking about. I just say the wrong one. But let's start with some fun. Before we get into our reactions to some local food news, we get into some recent restaurant ventures, and then we'll do maybe a few recommendations, or probably tied in your recent ventures. But
and I have a pet peeve of the week too.
Good,
which we're going to save for the end, folks.
Okay,
it's a biggie.
Oh, and I have to remember to get your Girl Scout cookie. I don't think we teased it, but we didn't really get it, what your favorite Girl Scout cookie is.
Well, let's get this out of the way right away. First of all, the mint cookies are awful.
Fighting words. Mint podcast over.
Mint
podcast ends.
Does not belong in a cookie.
I'm turning your mic all the way down.
Here's what mint belongs in. Jelly and a lamb, okay? It doesn't belong in cookies. Cookies are supposed to be sweet. Mint has got that sort of minty flavor I think ruins the taste of a cookie. I don't want to eat a cookie and feel like I'm chewing gum or eating a breath mint.
So you're anti-mint ice cream.
I'm anti-mint anything except jelly and on lamb. That's about it, okay?
I think we're fighting.
Or a julep. In a mint julep.
Okay.
It mixes very well with really good Kentucky bourbon.
Yeah. A good iced tea.
Yeah, and I'll give you that. See, I'm softening on mint, but not in cookies.
Have you ever had? So you don't like mint ice cream, so you won't like. I was going to say my trick with thin mints is I love them. It's the only Girl Scout cookie I fuck with, and I throw it in the freezer. And a frozen thin mint, you will see a sleeve of those thin mints disappear faster.
I throw mine in the garbage. Okay, the thin mints. But I do like Girl Scout cookies. And I don't even know the name of them, but I like the one that's kind of got caramel on it.
Oh, does it have coconut?
Yeah, the coconut caramel one.
Yeah, that one has been renamed, or depending on what region of the country you're in, it's called something else because of cancel culture. It used to be called Samoas. And then they changed it, I think, to like Caramel Delights.
All right, whatever. Because all the Samoans were rising in protest over
and
the
I
name
would be
of
like
cookie.
Why you've got the best damn cookie, you're the most popular, like be proud.
They're so good. Oh my god, I keep them away. It's like Oreos, Girl Scout Samoans and Oreos are things I don't even think about eating because I could go through an entire box in one sitting. I could.
Double stuffed Oreos.
Yeah, they're
my trick. You want to know my pro tip? My dad would always have glassware in his freezer for beer.
Yeah.
One day I was like, wait a second. I will put my milk in the frozen glass to dunk my Oreos in. That is a pro tip.
That's a pro tip? Yeah. I think they put the little the ingredients and the addictive ingredients and then they make you crave them. Yes. They do, laddie, they do.
Yeah, they're actually microdosing us secretly. Okay, we got the cookies out of the way. Let's go into some recent eatinglv.com article, because between eating, you do a little bit of typing.
I do a little writing here and there. I'm not as prolific as I was a decade ago, but I still do it once in a while.
Okay, I loved your last one. Granted, I'm a millennial, so I only skimmed it. But
I know. When it gets over 100 words, you're sort of glazing over.
That's why I love Twitter. There's only so many characters. Yeah. And that's why people love my emails. Emails are... really? Short and sweet.
I learned that lesson. I mean, I'm a long-winded guy, as all my friends and family can tell you. But emails, I learned less is more in emails, especially in professional emails.
Okay. Yeah. In your eatinglv.com article, your most recent post, and you teased it last podcast, was how to walk into a restaurant.
Yeah, because it's not, you think you know how to do it, folks, but you do not. And I mean, it's an art form in itself. I mean, I quote a book I just finished reading called A Waiter in Paris, charming little book about an English fellow. The experience of his was about 10 years ago, but he was down and out in Paris, kind of like a George Orwell, and although in the 21st century here, and he decided to try to, and he spoke a little French. He needed a job. He was desperately poor, and he decided to work in a restaurant. He started out as a busboy on like the lowest rung, and over a period of about a year, he worked his way up to full waiter. And it's just almost like a month by month anecdotes about what it was like to be, you know, they hated him because he was English and his French was terrible, and he slowly won over and actually made some good friends and had some very charming observations about restaurant culture and you know how closely bonded waiters get to be, and it's almost an us versus them, almost like a military foxhole kind of mentality, and he started out kind of disliking it, and then it kind of won him over, and he was very charmed by what he saw and very proud, and he talked about how proud, you know, waiting tables in Paris, especially in better restaurants, is a very sought after profession, and people just not like here, not like in L.A. and you know, where everybody wants to be an actor, or in New York and they're all on Broadway, but they're just waiting tables and tending bar. There, people take great pride in it, and they start. And he made friends with some of these guys some of them were in their 20s and some of them were in their late 40s and 50s. And this is what they're going to do. And they're going to be really, really good at it. And they are really, really good at it. But he had a whole little riff about walking into a restaurant. And okay. I'm going to read you the quote. I put this on my eatinglv.com article. I start my article with this quote, and it sort of inspired me, along with a picture of our very own Sam Mirajowski, who I hate to feed his ego, but yeah, I put a picture of him at the top of the page on my blog. But here's the quote from Edward Chisholm. Entering a restaurant really is an art form in itself. The confidence, the charm, the way new arrivals move across the space. There's a real elegance to someone who knows how to do it.
Yeah.
All right. And it's true. I think what people tend to forget, and you know, we're not talking about walking into a Denny's here. Okay. But when you're in a better restaurant and you know, going out to eat as an event, people tend to forget that you're on display. Mm-hmm. And people within the people who work in restaurants, they're like savants when it comes to judging people, and they judge you when you're 30 feet away from them as you're walking up to them, and how you approach them at the witness stand. I almost said witness stand, at the hostess stand.
It's the same thing sometimes.
Yeah, you know, 40 years a lawyer. But I mean, you're being judged, and you're being judged as you walk to your table, and everybody's looking at you. Restaurants are this public private space that are unique in our culture, and they've really only evolved in like the last 200 years. I mean, up until a couple hundred years ago, people ate in private. The only time you had public eating displays was when you were at a, 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 a festival, you know, a wedding, a funeral, you know, the Bacchanalian fest, you know, and the Saturnalia, whatever, you know, the pagans would have various feasts throughout the year, but they weren't daily, they weren't weekly, they weren't even monthly, but they were, this is when people ate in public, every time everybody else ate in private.
Yeah.
So when restaurants came about in the industrial age with the rise of the middle class, you suddenly present yourself on a stage when you walk into a restaurant.
Yeah.
And there's a way to do it. And it's part of it has to do with holding your head high, being polite, being nice to the hostess, even if the hostess stand has a higher IQ than the hostess.
That was funny. I enjoyed that line. That was funny.
And you just have to read the article. I mean, I go into some detail and a couple little anecdotes. And the people that do it well get the better tables. You're more confident. And the staff relates to you better if you go there looking like, looking your best, acting your best, and looking like you're there to have a good time. And there's a real style to doing that rather than being cocky or arrogant or too shy or insecure about yourself. You just have to create sort of an aura about yourself that you're there to have a good time and you want to project that, and it pays huge dividends if you do it.
So I agree. I think it's kind of similar. I think a lot about it, air travel back in the day. People would dress up and to get on an airline because they were on display. They took it much more seriously. One of the first things I remember is when I started traveling for business versus just like pleasure, I was always wearing suits or business clothes, and I would get treated better. I would get random upgrades. I would get random TSA. I would get sent over to the pre-check line, and I was like, this is nice.
Yeah.
So now I always dress up regardless of what I'm traveling
for.
It
also helps to be a really attractive blonde, young blonde woman. I'm just saying.
That helps more when I get pulled over. I will say that. But it's funny. So your article was great. I joke that I skimmed it, but just the headlines. You go dress up, be highly presentable, read the room, make a good first impression. Don't be a pain in the ass, even if the host is as dumb as the hostess stand. Be firm but polite. Graciousness goes a long way. Exude confidence by relinquishing control. And then at the end, you give some the like 10 commandments of it all to making an entrance. And it's funny because I look over this list and it's you're going on a date with the restaurant.
You are. It's like on your first date. Yep. Every restaurant is like, unless you go to a restaurant all the time.
Yes.
The first night, it's like a first date. Exactly.
And so you have to get all of the staff, everyone to like you. You want to have fun. They're going to have fun.
Right.
And then so it's funny looking over that. That's advice for people trying to date. And that's what you're doing when you go to these restaurants.
It is. I mean, I think I said it, and I related to men and women. I said it's like going on a date with a woman or trying to seduce a woman. I mean, are you at love at first sight? I mean, do you want to be confident, not too cocky? Mm-hmm. I mean, people, there's two extremes there. And there's the whole tech bro, sushi bro thing of, you know, the whole do you know who I am guy. And on the other end, there's the people that are apologizing for being in there. And
then
there's a happy ground. Both sides need to get comfortable with giving up control because that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're being judged by people, and not in a bad way. I mean, that's what I said about what I love about restaurant people is they're geniuses when it comes to sizing people up. And they have to be, because when you sit at that table, and even at the stand as you're walking to the table, they're looking at you going, I'm going to spend anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes to 3 hours in this person's company. Mm-hmm. Who are they? How can I act towards them? I'm speaking as a waiter or hostess to make their experience good that will, in response, make my day easier.
Right.
So it's like a date. It's like if you're doing your best and they're doing your best, both of you, it's a payoff for both of you.
Yep, exactly. And frankly, I'll say it's not easy. Like this list is, to me, some days I'm not up to the task. I go, I need to just go get an In-N-Out burger because I'm not ready.
Yeah.
And I don't have the energy after a long work day some days to do this. And so the tips and advice are great, but don't, I think it's easy. It's not easy.
And to me, the people that I save my most disdain for are the ones who go into restaurants with a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you can be too cocky. That doesn't pay off. You can be too shy, and that's not good either. But the worst ones are the ones, like, they're looking not to have a good time. And I've talked to so many managers and owners over the years, and they always say a remarkable number of people go to restaurants who really don't enjoy eating out because they don't like the loss of control.
Yeah.
And you are sacrificing that. It's like getting in an airplane. At some point, you just got to say, I'm here to enjoy the ride. Yeah. And but people who go in thinking, I want to make sure that, you know, that I have just the right amount of salad dressing, and I have just the then, and my tea's not too sweet, and my sorry, bozo, you know, you're there, you're playing by their rules, okay? And this American idea that I want everything just my way to make me comfortable is just wrong. It's the wrong attitude.
I have a funny anecdote on that story. I was one time sitting down and meeting with a potential client, and we're talking, and just kind of loosely, she asked me if I liked In-N-Out, and I was like, oh, yeah, I love In-N-Out. And I, you know, everyone has their In-N-Out order, right?
Right.
You know, it's their order. So I was like, what's your go-to In-N-Out order? And I asked her, and she said, I forget exactly what it was, but it was like, I get a cheeseburger, but I get no spread on it, and I get them to give me the spread on the packet on the side, and I take it home, and I put the spread on it myself. And I had the same thought. So I was like, really? I was like, why? And I was like, do you live far away? I was like, maybe it gets soggy. I don't know. And she goes, no, they just never can put on the right amount for me. It's either too much or not enough. So, okay.
Brother.
No. But this goes back to your control thing. I was like, this is a person that loves to control everything down to the T.
Exactly.
And so I left the meeting and I go, if this client signs with us or we decide to take the case, I go, I am noting the control is going to be a critical factor because when you represent someone, they have to give up control and say, we're trusting you. And your guidance. So I remember that.
People don't like that.
They don't.
Yeah. So make your own hamburger.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Or stay home and cook your own dinner. Don't go out. But I love going out. I love all of this. It's a great article. Go to eatinglv.com and learn how to walk into a restaurant. And then also check out our buddy who's not here.
Yeah. With his man purse.
He loves that thing.
I know. It's
a wine bag.
It's a wine bag, but it looks like the world's most ostentatious man purse.
So it should be Sam. Got it.
So it fits.
It fits.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Moving along. Let's get to some food news you can use. Are you ready, John?
All right. Where do we want to start? You want to start?
I'm going to start. I got this. Right. Not necessarily food related. What are your thoughts on the Mirage converting to the Hard Rock and that big guitar hotel?
Okay. Oh, excuse me. Can I have a pillow for me right now? Okay.
You don't care.
I could give two fucks about the constant branding and rebranding of these mega hotels now.
I know.
I mean, it's just a cycle. They're doing, you know, Park is MGM. Bally's is now
Horseshoe.
Da, da, da. It's like, you know, you can put a silk hat on a pig and it'll still be the Tropicana. Okay.
That's funny.
All right.
Okay, so you don't care. I'm excited for it. It's going to look cool.
It's probably it's a big weenie to have up there, another big thing on the Las Vegas Strip. So on that level, God bless them.
Rocky is in the room. Don't talk trash on weenies. okay, Rosa Ristorante on the ropes, ?
Yeah.
Do you know of, or do you think there's a definitive end to Rosa, or are we just seeing like signals of it maybe becoming more of a passion project now that the chef is over, that we just read the RJ is at Brezza?
Well, here's what my
Here's
what my spidey sense tells me, you know, 30 years of this gig. When you open to great acclaim and take a strip chef with huge chops and open a good restaurant like that and spend a lot of money on it and the food and design the menu, and then he leaves after, less than a year? Not even a year. I mean, one or two things is going on. The restaurant is definitely on the rocks. Like we talked about, in fact, the RJ broke the story this week, but we talked about it a month ago. And the restaurant's on the rocks, and the chef looks at it and goes, I'm jumping ship while I still can and looking after my own. Or sometimes, I mean, if you want to be a little more lenient or tolerant, you might say that the restaurant has use that chef to set up the template and going forward and set up all the systems, and now don't want to pay that chef, you know, the six figures.
You mean Rosa doesn't want to pay the six figures
for the chef? What they paid him to get there and set everything up and get all the systems in place.
He owned Rosa.
No, he was an owner of it.
Oh,
I don't think he was the owner of it. He had other money behind him. But the way he's left, the way he's taken a job on the strip with Brezza, This is Rob Moore. We're talking about a really, really talented guy and been in Las Vegas for a long time now. It doesn't bode well, I think, looking forward. I think Rose has got problems. I don't think it's going to – I would be really surprised if it was still there 6 months from now.
Wow.
So okay. I wish them all the success, but I think it's a misfire in a jinxed place, in a bad location.
It's
that's tough. On a busy road, but they're on a busy street. They're on wherever it is.
Is it St. Rose Parkway?
Yeah, St. Rose Parkway. But it's so busy and it's set back, and I think it's a misfire. That's all. Too bad. And then, you know, between that and Bodega Bagel crashing. You know, I was so hopeful a few months ago for Henderson, but I'm wondering if Henderson is just going to revert to the mean and just be as mediocre as it's always been. So who knows? We'll just wait and see.
And I'll still root for Henderson, but okay.
Okay.
So Six months on Rose's, your prediction.
That's my prediction.
Okay, Letty's was on Triple D.
Yeah, tonight. No, it's on tonight.
On tonight?
On this evening on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Letitia Mitchell, one of my favorite people in food. I think makes some of the best tacos in town.
Yep.
And DDD has come to town before, and they've featured some restaurants that have me rolling my eyes, like Lola's and a few others that I'm not too keen on, you know. But Letty's is definitely deserving of a spot in the national spotlight because great tacos, great story. She occupies the old El Sombrero, which was the oldest restaurant in town forever. I mean, they opened the building. Building dates to 1947. And I think the old El Sombrero was opened there in 1950 and lasted until like 2006 or something like that. It was great, great little Mexican joint. Now it's Letty's Tacos, and we love Letty's Tacos, and I'm really happy for Letitia.
I love Letty's. We love Letty's. I love it because it's just a walking distance, but they actually still have the old sombrero sign.
Yeah, they do. And to me, that sign is, I told Letitia once, if she ever closes her doors, I think the Neon Museum would come in and grab that sign right away, you know, and buy that sign.
Unless I get it first.
Unless you get it first. Okay.
Let's take a quick break. We're coming up, and then I want you to report back because we talked about Martin Yang's MY Asia opening at the Horseshoe, formerly known as Bally's.
Buckle your seatbelts, folks.
So
it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Go get a drink, sit down, and we will be right back to go over that and some of our recent ventures and our recommendations. Eat, Talk, Repeat here on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave a review, and yeah, we'll be right back.
Hi, it's Ash from Sam & Ash Injury Law. You need a lawyer you can trust. So give us a call at 702-820-1234 or go to samandashlaw.com. No pressure, just answers, because you deserve what's right.
Red, red wine. Stay close to me. I love this song.
I love this song too. But it feels more tropical, like it should be rum drinks.
It's reggae, yeah. This is an English group, UB40.
Look at you.
You know who wrote the song?
No.
Neil Diamond.
Okay.
How about that?
Fun facts on E-Talk Repeat.
These millennials don't know anything.
We don't know anything. But you know why? Because we can Google everything.
I know.
So I played that song when we came back here on Eat, Talk, Repeat because you and I, we alluded to it earlier that last night was fun and filled with wine.
Oh, my God. Oh.
Which was your favorite?
It was a Dionysian revelry of the first order. Well, you know, this was Mr. Hollywood's, like you said,
yeah,
his birthday.
Yeah.
And I brought some wine. I had no idea that we were going to have James Suckling there of Suckling.com, you know, basically the wine, American wine maven of all time. So it was a tough crowd. And let's go through them. I mean, I'm going to look at
you've got photos.
I've got photos. I'm going to look at my photos here. I mean,
While we're waiting, the one was we had a magnum of Penfold's Grange. And the coolest thing about that is one, Sam had gifted me a bottle of Grange for my birthday last year, and I've been saving it. I have yet to have Grange. Everyone talks about it. Mr. Hollywood says it's his wine on a deserted island. If he could only have one wine, that's the one. And it's world-renowned. And the cool thing was, not only did I get to try it, but it was out of a magnum. And James Suckling even said, he's like, I've never seen a Magnum.
A Magnum. I've never seen. I mean,
that was really cool.
I don't even know what it goes for these days. I mean, it was hundreds of dollars a bottle 20 years ago. I don't have no idea what a Magnum would put somebody back.
You got the list? You got the photo? Okay.
We started with Laurent Perrier Champagne.
Rosé,
And then we went to a white, kind of a Rhone Valley white, which I don't have the backup.
Oh, Cinquanon.
Cinquanon, which was nice, but a little too, I'm not keen on those grapes. But that's just me. I mean, it's a great wine. Then we went to something called Marcassan, which is a Chardonnay from Helen Turley, who's one of the great, great winemakers in Napa. Over the last 30 years.
What year was that, Marcus, in?
You know, it's funny because I'm looking at it.
It's like 2007 or something?
No, it was older than that.
19.
No, it was 13 years old. It was 13 years old. So, yes, you got
2000, okay.
Yeah. He was 13 years old, and I said to James, did you expect this wine to age this well? Because it had turned into this Chardonnay elixir that was like the greatest white burgundies that literally are at $5,000 a bottle. And in 13 years, it had turned into this complex, fruity, mineral-rich, intensity, structure, length, everything you look for in Chardonnay. I'm wine geeking out, folks, here.
I know.
You can hear me hyperventilating as I'm talking about it. Yeah, I can get wine geeky with the best of them, I think. Not James Orr and James Suckling are pretty tough company, though. I'm just a good amateur in their
I think there was another presence. A Marcassin Pinot.
A Pinot Noir, which was the weakest wine of the night, I thought. Yeah, it was a little weak. I mean, it was good. Believe me, it's great wine. If you on its own, it's fine.
But in that lineup,
it fades because we then had a Paolo Scovino of Rivera 2015 Barolo. Then we had Costa Estrenel 1985.
That was good.
Then we had a La Consilente 2000 Pomerol.
Very good.
And then of course the 09 Grange Penfold Grain in Magnum. And then the Pièce de Résistance.
Wait, we had it. What it was in Aubert?
Aubert, yeah, the Aubert Chardonnay, which I thought was great.
That was incredible.
Yeah, it kind of Sugar Shack. Yeah, it was really, really fabulous. And then the Pièce de Résistance overall. If we still have an audience out there, we still haven't lost you yet. Well, a 1953 Chateau Duquem, 70-year-old Chateau Duquem with a label that looked like it had gone through the dishwasher about a dozen times.
It looks like they found it on the bottom of the ocean.
Is the
bottle. And on the cork, getting the cork out of the bottle was, it took three guys to do it. They did it without failure. Like, it was phenomenal.
Suckling take the cork out? I think he did, didn't he?
Yeah, Suckling did. And you know what? It looked like it was going to taste like ass.
Well, it was basically the color of maple syrup.
Right.
You know,
but it was good.
It was fabulous. It still had acid and structure and fruit, and it was sweet but not too sweet.
Right.
And it was the kind of elixir, ambrosia, that sweet wine aficionados go for. It's just out there. I mean, these are priceless bottles, and to taste one that was 70 years old is like one of the most special things I've ever done in wine tasting in my whole life. And I've tasted a lot of good wines.
And it might be the most special thing. I mean, it definitely is the most special thing I've done to date and probably will be for the rest of my wine drinking career. But it was remarkable. You made a great point. We just needed some blue cheese, like a Roquefort.
That's it.
Okay, we detoured. Wait, did you have something
else? I was just going to say, if you want to see the lineup, you can go to my Instagram feed at John Curtis. And I've posted a few. I will post some more pictures later today.
Shameless plug.
John Curtis Instagram feed. And, of course, go to suckling.com if you want to learn all about fine wine from the absolute master of it.
Yeah, and they've got a great Instagram, too. It's fun. So that was our wine detour. It was deserved.
Food at Anima by Ito that matched all the wines. I mean, it's, you know, folks, I don't want to brag. Okay, I'm going to brag a little bit. Sometimes it doesn't suck to be me and Ashley Watkins, okay? And to be in our little constellation of friends and family. Okay?
It does not suck. Yeah. I have a blessed life. And honestly, I'm so thrilled to be surrounded by great people that love sharing their great lives with me. So, yes, we did this wine dinner at Anima by EDO up at the Gramercy. And unbelievable food. Yeah. And I don't know how many of these dinners and parties we've done, but they just keep getting better. So incredible stuff. I hope some of those items make the official menu. But and that's a pro tip. I guess if you're listening and you need a party and you need a big dinner, go to Anima by EDO. O's website, and they have a good page on big events, private events. They've got a private room and plenty of space around the restaurant, and they will make whatever kind of menu you want. They're great. I love them.
It really is the most sophisticated local restaurant in Las Vegas. You know, we have some real heavy hitters on the strip, but this one for a neighborhood restaurant in terms of food, cocktails, wine, the whole program service. Pretty much hits all the buttons. This is not a paid-for commercial.
No.
This is just from the heart, because we eat there a lot and we pay for it. But it's really, really good.
Yeah, no, we paid for it.
Yeah, I bet you did.
it's not even a neighborhood restaurant. Honestly, John, I go Anima punches so far above its weight. I mean, between you, Mr. Hollywood, James Suckling, all these world-traveling eaters and foodies were all sitting at that table blown away by their food.
Yeah,
that's incredible. And the price point is not bad.
It's way cheaper than eating on the strip these days.
So that's our plug. Now let's get back to your, I know, we're going to go, we went from really high to we're going to go really low. MY Asia. First, how's the horseshoe? Does it just feel like the Bally's?
Oh, it's still the same shitty hotel casino. They should have plowed it under like 20 years ago. Okay. It's just a toilet in there. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I mean, I remember gambling there with my father like 30 years ago. This was after the MGM fire, and it was Bally's, and they had renovated it and made it all sparkly and new. And it was kind of nice. We're talking about mid-90s. But I've been back a few times. And in the late 90s, early aughts, they had upgraded all their food and beverage programs, and it was kind of fun. They used to have something called the Sterling Brunch there, which was like the best champagne brunch in town. Unlimited Perrier Jouet champagne. Boy, everybody would get just, you know, back in the day, it was $50 a person.
What?
Yeah, unlimited Perrier Jouet champagne. And you would go, you'd pay your $100, and we're talking 95 to 2000 now, I think, around there. And you would go there, and they had caviar, sliced smoked salmon. They would cook you filet mignons to order. I mean, it was quite the thing back in the 90s, and I think it started in the 80s, and unlimited champagne, and people would eat and drink yourself silly. And this is back when caviar was good and not just the farm-raised shit you get everywhere now. sorry, aside there. But now it's just so shop-worn. The parking lot of Paris and Bally's is just filthy. I mean, just, ugh. I mean, we've been there, and I remember going there. The last time I was there was pre-COVID with Alexandra, and we went, oh, my God, this place is gross. You know, like from the time you get out of your car to walking in, it's gross. Well, guess what? It's 5 years later, and it's still gross, okay? I mean, we went there. Enough of that. If you want to go to, I'm saying this just as a forewarning. Martin Yan, who's Yan Can Cook, an icon of PBS cooking shows for decades, opened MY Asia, My Asia, in Bally's, that's about to be renamed Horseshoe, even though there's a Binion's downtown, which used to be called, it's still confusing. But anyway, so you open this thing, a shameless, cynical branding deal. I call it cynical brand whoring, which is what Caesar's Palace is all about these days. And I went there at the invitation of a local food influencer, a good friend of mine. I won't name him because I don't want to throw him under the bus. And I'm like, okay, this is great. They have they're going to have La Mian hand-pulled noodles, and they're going to have Martin Yan bringing all the famous recipes there.
Was Martin Yan, was he there?
No, he was not there. And I knew something was wrong when they started doing the hand-pulled noodles, and we asked, well, are they going to be in the soup? And the guy looked at me and said, well, we don't do that. And we were at a table. There's eight of us. And we went, what do you mean you're hand-making the noodles in front of us at the big show? Oh, well, we don't have any soups with these noodles in them. We're just doing this to show you how it's done.
Shut the fuck up.
So I call them stunt noodles. They're stunt noodles, right? So I knew something was off then. Then the food started showing up. And I'm reading that menu, and it's interesting, but it's kind of a Pan-Asia thing. You know, a little Thailand, a little Chinese, a little Vietnamese here and there. And it just got progressively worse. And, I mean, it made P.F. Chang's, it made P.F. Chang's, you know, look like Wing Lei, okay?
Wow.
I would prefer a meal at P.F. Chang's. It was amateurish. That, you know, he has this thing called three-cup chicken, where he does the chicken wings, supposedly his signature dish. They were undercooked. I mean, they literally were. I was eating chicken wings that were raw in the center towards the bone.
No.
And then with a glaze that, you know, how do you make a honey glaze that doesn't taste sweet or spicy or anything? I mean, it was somehow they put a glaze on these things that could have been baby food. The curry didn't taste like curry. I mean, they had this spicy numbing sauce on the tofu, which was not spicy or numbing. I mean, it was failure after failure after failure. And then I went, this is just celebrity chef brand whoring at its worst. I mean,
Was there anything that was good? Any redeeming quality of it?
At the very end, they did an udon noodle soup, a beef noodle soup with very tender beef and a very good broth in it. And I thought that sort of hit most of its marks. But by that time, we had had about 12 bad dishes in a row. And I remember some of the little shumai dumplings weren't terrible. And
they weren't terrible.
We there were eight of us, and I think we ate about three quarters of the menu.
Yeah, it's not a large menu.
Yeah, it's not a large menu, but if we had 14 things on it, 11 of them were awful. So, I mean, I don't think people listening to this podcast, maybe some tourists out there were thinking of going. I would, you know, it'll probably make money, and that's all that Caesars wants to do. They just want to slap these licensing deals on these things, and people go in and go, yeah, I heard of that guy. I would have a Gordon Ramsay cheeseburger, yeah, because he's on Fox 5. You know, even, you know, these dumbass middle Americans who, like, will buy anything if it's advertised to them. So that's what they're naming these places at. So, sorry, my Asia, it was an embarrassment.
It is not my Asia. It's no one's Asia, damn it. Yeah.
So let's accentuate the positive now.
Okay.
So I was so depressed doing that. I also went to this pathetic little place in my neighborhood called Bespoke Kitchen.
I remember.
Okay, so I'm not going to waste time on Bespoke Kitchen. The owners do not know the meaning of the word
bespoke. Yes. You posted a photo of the burger. I've got to go there. I'm right now. I'm on a burger crawl, and so I'm always looking for the next best burger. No. And you posted a burger, and I got my little hopes up. And then I read the caption, and I started looking at it closer, and immediately I was like, I need a water. It looked so dry.
It was hideously bad. and it's like, here, have our bespoke burger. I mean. I look at the people behind the counter. You don't even know what you're doing. Okay, you're just
don't go there.
But let's talk about where they should go.
Yes,
Naxos Taverna in the Red Rock Hotel and Casino.
It's new.
Literally blew my hair back. It was so good. Dropped my forks. I mean, eyes rolling back in the head, tongue hanging out, drool coming down my chin.
Whoa,
good. That's how good it was. It was. Amazing. The best seafood I have seen off the strip ever in the history of Las Vegas. And I've been here since 1981.
First of all, you don't give many places that kind of review that reaction. And you and the food gal loved it. So what did you have? What were the highs, lows? And how long has it been open? Do you know?
A month?
Okay.
Maybe not even. I mean,
and what's the story? It's owned and run by the Lotus of Siam Group.
Well, you know, I'm scratched the surface on that a little bit. I think there's a fellow who used to be with Tao. I'm going to glitch his last name, so I won't use his whole name. And he has formed a partnership with the Lotus of Siam people.
Okay.
Penny Chua. And her mother, Saipan Chutthaman, and her father, Bill, are getting up there. So I don't think they're in the restaurants or in the kitchens as much anymore. So Penny and her sister.
That's not true.
Oh, I'm sure they'll be okay.
Yeah.
I'm not accusing them of not being there. I'm just saying.
The reason I know that is because I was just at Lotus of Siam with Mr. Hollywood like a week or so ago.
On Flamingo.
And Penny and Saipan came over to the table because they go way back with Mr. Hollywood. Yeah. And they said they were just at they do a commissary kitchen.
Oh.
That's where a lot of their sauces and curries are, I think, come from because of the two locations. And so she's still... slaving around, cooking.
She loves it. That's why the quality is so high.
Yes.
But I think her daughter, looking forward, wants to sort of maintain the brand, expand the brand. So she's hooked up with this. They form a company, and now they have two restaurants, the Lotus of Siam in Red Rock. And right next door is this Naxos Taverna, which is basically like Greek seafood. I think they call it Greek seafood with a Mediterranean accent. It's very Greek. It really copies a lot from the Milos formula. on the strip, the Estuario Milos, which they don't display the fresh fish, but it's a lot of, you know, whole fish, yep, roasted, a lot of Greek appetizers, mez platters, you know, with hummus and baba ganoush and that sort, yes, of thing. Fresh-made pita bread to the table that they replenish. Really nice dips. We had a great salad. They made artichokes. They know how to cook an artichoke. Do you know how long I've looked for someone in this whole friggin' town that knows how to cook an artichoke? Nobody knows how to do it. They trim them. You know, they boil them. They then sear them, and they were just gorgeous. I mean, everything I had, the fish was great. The sauces were good. The service is a little unsteady. You can tell they're still finding their sea legs with the service. But I think seafood this great, at a price point that's underneath what you would pay on the strip for the same stuff, is going to find a big following out here on the west side of Las Vegas.
Okay, and it's in Red Rock.
Right in there.
Big restaurant? Small restaurant?
Not, 170 seats, so that's my definition of a big restaurant. Okay. Yeah. So it's not tiny, but open kitchen. They have a full bar. They have an oyster bar out front. I mean, everything I had was just kind of tremendous, and I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so
Naxos Taverna.
Is it your new favorite?
Well, it's my new, I can't wait to go back there restaurant. Remember my litmus test for all restaurants is when you're walking out, whether you've been there the one time or 100 times, do you say to yourself, I want to come back here?
Yeah.
Right? Same with In-N-Out Burger, right? Same with In-N-Out Burger, same with Letty's Tacos. When you leave, when you're finished, when you're full, are you saying to yourself, I can't wait to come back here, or I'm looking forward to the next time we come back here? And I had that in spades when I walked out of Naxos.
That's a great review. I've got to go. Anywhere else?
That'll probably do it. I've trashed two places, and I loved one. And I'm trying to watch my weight, Ashley Watkins, because I'm about to go to Europe in a week from today. So I got to trim down.
Europe will handle that by how much you walk.
Yeah. We put in 5 to 10 miles a day in Europe. So yeah, I never gain weight in Europe ever.
It's because you walk so much. I love it. I went to one place, very cool. I started telling you about it last night. It's called La Moon.
Yeah.
It is. It's got a great pedigree. It is on Spring Mountain and Jones, right next to a Chevron station. That is the landmark.
As most great restaurants are.
Isn't it so freaking ridiculous about this town? It is the brother of Bank, and I can't say his last name. From Lamai and Patio Wine Garden, which I absolutely adore both of those spots. So went to La Moon with Mr. Hollywood. He's already gone back since with some friends. And all I've got to say is they're making great Thai dishes in a very cool space. They're open late. They cater to the industry crowd. And they have a thing on their menu called gas station beef. And I was sold. You know?
Did it have the aroma of petrol about it?
No. But I just thought it was a bold move. You know, you're right next to a gas station. A gas station wouldn't even call their hot dog gas station meat.
So ordered irony.
It. And it was fabulous. Little spicy. Great. I highly recommend it if you're looking for a little hole in the wall spot, a little gem. That is my recommendation. La Moon.
Okay. So we've got La Moon. Great little gas station place on Spring Mountain Road. Naxos Taverna, west side. My Asia is a big misfire, and by misfire I mean a tragedy. Okay, celeb chef tragedy of the first order.
I'm waiting for a celeb chef to come in and actually blow your socks off.
Well, the last one to do that I think was Jose Andres.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, before him you had I called it the French Revolution with Guy Savoy, Joel Robuchon, Pierre Gagnaire. Daniel Boulud. We're all talking about the mid-2000s right there, the 2005 to 2010 era. But that's kind of been it, I think. You know, Ramsay is just, you know, he doesn't even make any pretense of, you know, he's just the guy who's collecting a check. Same with Giada. And I've been saying that the celebrity chef thing is over for several years now, but places like Caesars, that's a lazy way of running your running your F&B program, but that's how they want to do it. I will say that I got reached out to by the food and beverage vice president of the new Fontainebleau this past week, and I'm going to be meeting with him when I get back from Europe, and he wants to go over the restaurants in advance with me. Just and I said, thank you. That's very, very nice. As I've done this before, sometimes I raise an eyebrow, but it's interesting to hear how they think about the mix of eateries they put into their hotels in a big hotel like that.
Yes. A friend of ours who's in the wine business. She has seen some of the internal renderings of the Fountain Blue and heard about the restaurants and says she's pretty excited.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a fun spot. All right. Those are your recommendations and your to go and not to go. And now it is that time where we go to the rant, the pet peeve.
Okay.
Do you want to go first? Let me go first because I think yours is good. Mine's kind of lame. Mine is when I go to a restaurant and
yours are always so hyper specific though.
Yeah, that's like, me. You know, it's the tiniest violin. You know,
the lemons were sliced too thin in my iced tea.
Yeah, no, you know? That's actually one of my pet peeves. Don't give me a slice of lemon. Give me a wedge. Damn it! See, what am I supposed to do with a slice?
I know. Okay.
I'm like over there trying to squeeze the lemon juice out of it. Give me a wedge.
See, I told you, folks.
Right. That's not my pet peeve of the week, though.
Okay.
This one is when a restaurant has an item on their dish. Like, we can just say a Caesar salad. And you go there, and that is your go-to meal. You get it all the time. Yeah. It's a certain way. And then one day, they change it up on you.
Yeah.
And they don't tell you. They don't go, like, new summer Caesar or something like that. And then
you're
licking
your chops in anticipation.
I'm waiting for the thing I know and expect. Yeah. And then it shows up and I'm like, what the F is this? And they go, oh yeah, chef wanted to try some things. Yeah. And I was like, you've seen me here. You know this is my thing. Like, this, why are we doing this?
I'm not here for you to try new things.
I know, damn it. Even if it is better, tell me it's different.
Yeah.
So that's really my grievance, is if you have an item on your menu and it is a staple and you blindside me with changes, I'm going to be a little upset, a little grouchy.
Okay, and what's the thing about wedges now? It's got to be slices or a wedge?
It's got to be, okay, so if I get a water...
And it's a slice.
It's just cute.
Screw your slice. You want a wedge.
Yeah, I want a wedge so I can spritz it.
And woe be the bartender who cuts it too thin on her. Okay,
yes.
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
All right, well, my pet
it's tough to please me. So.
Oh, okay. Well, my pet peeve, I'm going to try to keep this under control.
Don't.
But I've been thinking about this a lot. I mean, I've been thinking about this for probably about 10 years, so... Time me here, actually. I'll try to.
Okay, I got you. I got this.
Okay. Foodies.
Foodies.
Foodies in air quotes. You are not a fucking foodie. Quit calling yourself a foodie. And I'm just going to run this top of my head. Nothing's written down here. People who say, I'm a foodie. Yeah. How is that prepared? Because, you know, I don't like too much onions in it, okay? I'm like, I'm sorry, can I have, how much sauce? Can I have it on the side? Do you use butter in that? You know, trying to cut back on butter. But I'm a foodie, okay? Oh, I'm sorry, what did you say that? No, I'm trying to eat a little less gluten these days. You know, take the bread away from me. Oh, no, I can't do it. I'm a foodie. Well... Sea urchin? No. But I'm a Japanese food foodie. Yeah, I love Japanese food. It's just the raw fish I'm not keen on. Okay? You know, I mean, you're not a fucking foodie. Quit calling yourselves foodies. It's the most overused fucking word in the industry, in America these days. All right? True foodies are people who eat everything. They're omnivores. They're carnivorous. They're omnivorous. I mean, and I hear it all the time, and I can't stand it.
You eat first, ask questions
later. Yeah, exactly. You don't have control in a restaurant. You take what the chef gives you.
Yeah.
You don't walk in with a chip on your shoulder. You don't say, well, I like it this way. Can you play it? You're not a foodie, okay? Oh, I love everything, but I don't eat that. You know? Fuck you, okay? All of you. You're not a foodie. Quit calling yourself that. Now, I think I started, I was a foodie, first of all, 20 years before anybody invented the term.
Yeah.
Okay. So I can stake the higher ground on this one. And I hear it all the time in restaurants. Oh, my wife and I are foodies. Well, you know, I've got this really, really cool, Shaanxi noodle place in this little, what? You know, what is it? What's Shaanxi noodles? Well, they're soup noodles and they're hand cut and they put it, and was it spicy? Because we don't do spicy. You know, fuck you, all of you. You're not fucking foodies. So quit telling people that you are. End of rant. How long was that? Two minutes?
It was 2.5 minutes. All right. It was solid.
I need a cigarette or a joint.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think foodie for me is like, I really just say I love food. I love chasing food. I like finding good food. But foodie's probably just a lazy way of saying that. But
well, it's the way people want it. They want to gain some kind of status because sometime around 15 years ago, it became cool to like food.
Well, Instagram.
Instagram. It really blew up with Instagram. But it really started even a decade before. When I really think the Food Network, God bless them, and the celebrity chefs of the great ones of the time, the Lagassis, the Mario Batalis, all these people, they made a huge impact in food. Mm-hmm. And food became cool in the 90s.
Yep.
Back in the 70s.
They're celebrities.
Yeah.
Chefs became celebrities.
Yeah, they became rock stars.
Yes.
And before they were just worker bees pumping out things in the kitchen. So it became cool, and by association then, it became cool to say that you like this stuff, but you're still the same narrow-minded little schlub you've always been. But you want to pretend that you're cool by saying you like things that when you really don't. And to really be a foodie, or let's not even use the term, a food lover, a gourmand, an epicure, or just an omnivorous person who loves eating out, you have to give up, again, control. And you want to see what the restaurants have to offer. And you don't have it your way. You have it their way. And then you see if you like it or not.
Yep.
And if you don't have that open-mindedness, you cannot call yourself a foodie.
Oof.
That's a milder way of, and Mom, up there in heaven, I apologize for all the F-bombs.
She forgives you. They were worth it. They weren't gratuitous F-bombs.
Yeah.
They were warranted. It's frustrating. I think you're right. It comes down to control. But foodies were born out of, like you said, Food Network, Yelp, and Instagram. They created this concept of where people needed to get clout or status by finding a new food truck or finding a new place, and then you find out you're literally just chasing grilled cheese with tomato soup, and you don't like when it's not Kraft.
Yeah, well, it's like saying you're a baseball fan but you only watch the World Series too, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean,
exactly.
I mean there are fans and there are fans.
Yep.
Okay. You know,
real fan goes back and sits in the old ballpark and listens to the radio broadcast.
Like, there you go. As I did. Yes, I did. It's like saying I like classical music, but only listen to Mozart's greatest hits or something.
Yeah.
You've got to, you know, slow your roll there, dude or girl, because you're just using that term to give yourself status that you don't have.
Right.
And it's so overused these days. And maybe you can cut that rant down by 30 seconds or so.
No.
I don't know.
No.
Okay.
If I could, I would, but we would be doing the listeners a disservice, John.
Right. You can always turn it off, folks, in mid-rant.
Well, you know, okay. Spotify, Apple Podcast, they all have the, like, 15-second skip. So if they want, they can just fast forward.
That's great.
Yeah. I'm over this.
You know, and it keeps going back to me. And then I said the fucking dude.
And we're just going to put you on loop. Fuck you, foodies. And it's just going to go on repeat. So there you go. That's how we're going to fix it. But
Well, you've wasted another good hour, folks.
Another solid hour in the can. E-talk repeat with John Curtis. What are you calling yourself today? What's the...
The bloviating barrister.
The bloviating barrister.
Yeah.
You can follow us at E-talk repeat on all platforms. At Ash the Attorney on all platforms. Sam, who missed out on today's shenanigans, at What's Right Sam. Please let him know what he missed, because I won't. Do you think he'll listen?
I listen to him rant about Republican politics all the time.
Yeah, he should listen to our show.
Yeah, he should.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll quiz him. Then follow John, who's really the gem of it all and leads us to all of these great spots. At Eating Las Vegas on Twitter, at John Curtis on IG, and it's CURTAS. EatingLV.com, being John Curtis. That's his latest blog articles. Go back in time. He has written some absolute gems if you need some reading. I always crack up about the one, what's the dungeon?
The Four Queens.
Yes. What is that?
Hugo's Cellar.
Hugo's Cellar. A dungeon. Go read that blog article and you will chuckle. So. Yeah. Have another great week. Enjoy your weekends. Let us know where you're eating, where we should be eating, and like, subscribe, and leave us a review.
All right. Bon appetit to all. Forget about the rat race.